At work, I always like to record these because people who aren't able to attend oftentimes do listen. So that's why we're being recorded. It won't be video though. Anyway, so I'm Lisa Lorraine Smith, the Chief Program Officer, and I get the opportunity to run the affinity groups, which we now have 25 in the network. And we're starting one for resettlement agencies soon. So that's needed, as I'm sure you all know. But the best part about it is that I get to work with these fabulous people who are take leadership roles in the network. And that is Carl Josart from JFS of Houston and Lee Friedman right here from JFCS of Minneapolis. And basically, they take it away. I just do the introductions and then they lead the discussion. So I know we have some new people. We might want to just have you introduce yourselves. And I just like everyone to right click and put their community so we all know where everyone's calling in from. That helps as well. So with that being said,
I will kind of go in the order that you're on my screen. So it looks like Anne, you're kind of next to me, at least on my screen. You want to just briefly introduce yourself?
Sure. Sorry, I was adding my location. I'm Ann Thorson, newly promoted Chief Operating Officer for Jewish Family Service of Atlantic and Cape May County. I took this position July 1. I've actually been with the agency close to 20 years in the area of community mental health, starting out as a direct service path worker, moving through to different positions within the agency, ending as a senior director in charge of, or overseeing, I should say, community support services, also known as supportive housing, as well as the health and safety officer for the agency. So thank you all.
All right. Great. Congratulations.
Thank you. Nice meeting everyone too.
Miriam, you're next on my kind of circle.
Hi, I am at Jewish Family Services of Greater Hartford. I've been in this role for about next week will be 2 years. My background before that was coming from Federation, and I'm looking forward to this conversation, which I am deep in middle of.
Yeah.
Jacob, you're next.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Jacob Gottlieb. I am the Chief of Staff at JARC in Bloomfield Hills, which is in Metro Detroit, Michigan. I ended up here through a long, like most people, sort of path. I don't think anybody really like decides that they want to be a number two or a COO when they're a kid. But I've been around JARC my entire life. My mom worked here about 25 years ago, so I have very fond memories and really know the insides and outs. And CEO Shandell Bronstein was actually my first boss ever when I was in high school. So it's sort of a little bit of a full circle situation, and I'm happy to be here as well. Thank you.
Great. Tim.
Hello, I'm Tim Goffman from St. Paul, from JFS in St. Paul. And I've been the CEO here for just coming up on the end of my 10th year.
Wow. Okay, cool. Kylie, I think you're next.
Hey, good afternoon, everyone. I'm Kylie McLeaf. I have been with Jessa, I think it's 20 months now. I feel like it's like your first kid, right? Like you count by months until they're like three. And this is how I've met everyone. We are still working from home. And so this conversation is, you know, a good one to have. Previously, I came from another large nonprofit after 21 years, and I was the CEO there. So it actually was a nice transition, honestly, into the two spot. I tell Todd all the time, I sleep better at night. So
that's great. Thanks for welcome. Rachel, I don't know if you can hear us, but if you're there and want to introduce yourself, feel free to unmute and say hello. Okay, if not, she may be not joined yet. Lee, do you want to introduce yourself and then maybe kick us off?
Sure. Thanks, Carl. Well, great to have a couple people that have not been with us before, especially congratulations to Anne on the big promotion and Jacob to having your role. And it sounds like a really interesting way in connection to JARC over the years. I see Rachel, we can see now. So Rachel, and now somebody else is popping in, but so in addition to being the co-chair with Carl and getting to work with Lisa, And I will just stop there and say, so as we went into Rosh Hashanah and people were sending their wonderful greetings of Lashana Tova, Lisa took the time to send one to all the different affinity group co-chairs, and totally appropriately, the response was primarily everyone to say, we're grateful for you and thank you and the amazing work that Lisa does, from when there were a few affinity groups to more than a few to a gazillion. And it's been, you know, a terrific lifeline and resource, I think, these affinity groups, for lots of folks in the network. And it doesn't happen in the first place without Lisa. So that's great. It's great to hear Miriam saying you're excited for this, ready for this conversation. So I'm at JFCS Minneapolis. Out of our small group, we're really repping today. We have Tim from the St. Paul side of the Twin Cities and me from the Minneapolis side. And we collaborate quite a bit between our two agencies. I have been at JFCS for about 7 years and the COO for most of that time, about 6 years. So, we'll do a couple more introductions because now we have Rachel and Karen and Leah, and then we can circle back and talk about what we're going to cover in our time today. So I'll just tap Rachel.
Hi, I'm Rachel. I'm the Assistant Director at the Jewish Family Services in Indianapolis. I haven't been in one of these meetings in a few months, so I'm excited to see everyone again and look forward to the conversation.
Awesome. And I think I had the chance to meet Rachel like an in-person conference that we had at the network. It's like hard to imagine and remember that we actually had those. I can think thoughtfully and happily about the next time we get to do it, technically in Minneapolis.
You don't have to go far.
I won't have to go far. Karen, if you want to introduce yourself to the group.
Sure. Hello, my name is Karen Corkin, and I'm the CEO here at JCFS in Chicago.
Thank you. And Leah.
Hi, I'm Leah Schechter. I'm at Shoki JFS in Fairfield County, Connecticut. Technically, I am the CPO, Chief Program Officer, but I came in and replaced the COO. And so that is kind of a funny place to be, as there are some things that are more COO than CPO. And so I get to join all of you.
Nice. Well, all good. I don't think there's any formality to who gets to be in the
two
group.
Twos. So you're number two, Leah.
Whatever right. that means, right, exactly. It's all good.
Right.
Great to have people for the first time, people for the first time in a while. We sent out a survey, and I appreciate everybody who participated to give us feedback on what they prioritized for conversation. It was also really helpful. I think we were trying to find out what people were doing in terms of vaccination, and I'm guessing that that's been evolving since we did the survey. Mm-hmm. And the two topics that seemed to be the highest priority for today when we did the survey were COVID, like what's the latest and what are people's questions and what are people's experiences, as well as staff retention and recruitment. And there's certainly an interconnection there, but it isn't only COVID things related to retention and recruitment. And if anybody wants to throw in the chat, if there's sort of a burning question or a topic that you would really love to get some input or guidance on today, we can definitely make room for that. I will just kick it off in terms of figuring out where folks are at by saying that we are very much in the transition. So today marks the first day that there are out since March of 2020, where there is a, what we're calling our soft reopening, where the office doors are unlocked. People could walk in off the street. A receptionist would be there to greet them. Phone calls would be answered live rather than going straight to voicemail. Every program has been operating, which I'm sure is the case with most other agencies, but in-person has been, you know, gradually increasing and then falling back and so on. So that started today toward an October 18th, much more robust opening, where our staff will have a requirement to be in the office or in the field 50% of the time. Some are already doing more than that. Really interesting to see therapists doing in-person therapy with masks, which 18 months ago was the last thing they thought they would do. And they're not all choosing it, nor are their clients, but in some cases it's better than Zoom, and they're happy to be doing it. And we actually, as of today as well, if you come into the building for service or to work, you have to provide proof of vaccination or a negative test result. And that's not the case for services outside the building, but it will be the case for our staff at least, not necessarily clients and participants in all parts of their work by that same October 18th deadline. So that just gives you an idea of where we're at. And even though it started today, I will say we don't even have all the details fully in place. We're trying to figure it out kind of as we go, have people have enough information, and it's quite a thing.
Mm-hmm. Lee, when you were on with us earlier and you had something going on, was that around this? Remember you had to—
It was. So I was saying to Carl and Lisa right before people were getting on, I said, you know, it goes from just the daily intense to the crazy intense. I think I'm in like double crazy intense, and it's partly that the receptionist who's down there has a supervisor who's on a leave of absence and a colleague who's not coming into work, and I'm stepping in as the supervisor and trying to figure out if she needs breaks and if people are actually coming in and, you know, things like that. So it is related to that, as well as a number of other things that unfortunately are going ways that you wouldn't choose for them to go. But that's why we have these jobs. That's why we do what we do. So, and thankfully don't do them alone. So I'm just going to pick, even though I'd be happy for anybody to jump in, but Miriam, since you were particularly ready for a conversation, I'm thinking you probably had something on your mind that you either wanted to share or hear.
So, I mean, we were deep in trying to figure out if we were going to mandate vaccines, and then the president decided for us. So that was nice and convenient. It made my life easier, and, you know, that's where we were leaning, but now we can just say, well, we have no choice. The two things that I am struggling with right now, and I kind of wanted to get a sense of where people were on this. One was, you mentioned the negative COVID test and whether, as we roll out this policy, whether we offer that as an option, obviously beyond a medical exemption for the vaccine, but whether we start off with there's a vaccine mandate versus there's a vaccine mandate or a testing option. That's the first thing that I'm struggling with. Part of my concern with that also is it also adds a layer of maintaining that, of tracking the tests, and which I'm sure some of you are doing. So that is the first thing. And then the other thing that keeps coming up again is whether we will require that for clients. Our JCC actually just sent an email out an hour ago saying that no one will be allowed to enter the JCC without proof of vaccination. So I've gotten that email now forwarded to me 7 times. So, you know, I mean, I struggle with going back and forth between, we're a clinical setting, no doctor's office is doing that, we need to serve our clients regardless. At the same time, we're not healthcare, and we can serve them via telehealth and offer another option. And I also do value the way that those policies encourage vaccinations in our surrounding populations. So I personally and professionally am very conflicted as to what the right move is there. Would love to get a sense of what other agencies are doing, what they're considering on that.
Thanks, Miriam. I appreciate it. And just because I revealed that we've already started, I'll just throw in a little bit about how we got to where we are. And although it's a little unclear what's going to happen with the Biden proposal, or, you know, that now it has to be Department of Labor and OSHA, it seems mostly consistent with what we've started to do. So at least that's nice to know, that like we're not starting something and then having to shift in a totally different direction. I will say we're also getting notification from at least one state agency with which we have a contract telling us that they actually sent an email Tuesday of last week saying that by Wednesday, we already had to be complying with vaccination proof or negative test requirements, which we like, really? Like by tomorrow? And for who? And is it like all of our staff or just the ones working on that program? So that's becoming a bit strange to figure out which contracts are requiring it. Is it the city? Is it the county? Is it the state? But at least most of them seem to be doing the dual vaccination or negative test. I would say before that became clear and we talked about it, I really would have preferred not to do it. The administrative stuff, now that we're doing it, is really difficult. Who's got the responsibility, and do you store it or do you not store it? And But it does feel like even before it was becoming more common, I think for us, it was what you were talking about, which is in order to be inclusive, even if we wished everyone would be vaccinated, it's still a way to try to move the needle. And the thought was, for how long is somebody going to be willing to do a test every single week? And then if they also can't go to their favorite music venue and they can't go to their cousin's wedding and they can't get on an airplane.
Well, that's the hopefully hope.
Right. So hopefully cumulatively, the negative testing will start to be reduced. But in the beginning, that's why we chose to do it in terms of clients and participants. So again, for us in the building, if they want to receive services or attend an event in the building, they will have to provide proof of vaccination or a negative test result. But if they're receiving services in their home or in a hospital or, you know, in a cafe or something, if it's workforce development or just a meeting with a, you know, case manager, then at least currently that would not be required. We do have one program where, so our protocol is masks in person with clients. And we have a program that, you know, a mental health program that had had a waiver from the state for 17 months where you could do it virtually. The waiver went away. We don't get paid if we don't provide the service in person, but for us, if the client won't wear a mask, we're doing it virtually and just not getting paid. So there's all these different nuances of those pieces.
Do you, when you say the negative COVID test, is that within how long do they have to take it? Is it PCR or RAT? Like, how specific are you about all that?
And for us, I just sort of tried to get as many policies as I could find and see, and it seemed pretty uniform from like theaters in Minneapolis and St. Paul to employers that were public about it. It seemed like PCR only 72 hours. That seemed to be the standard. I'm seeing a lot of nodding heads. So we went with PCR 72 hours, but we have an employee who is in the building today. They had gotten a test last week and it was not a PCR. It was a TMA, which actually seems like it's, I have no professional knowledge about this stuff, but like what I read seemed to suggest TMA is really close to and maybe as reliable as PCR. So for the moment, we're accepting it and trying to get them to switch their testing regime to PCR because they're not getting back, like they said, I'm not getting vaccinated. So they're going to have to stick with testing. But we're doing PCR 72 hours and then once a week for staff. For clients, if they come into the building, they have to provide it every single time they come in, because for them, it's going to be once a month or once every 2 months or maybe once a week.
But Lee, did you see that what Jacob asked? If you're testing in the building or requiring them? Well, we know you're requiring them to bring it in, but are you testing in the building?
But we are not providing testing. And in Minnesota, somewhere. At least, there's still quite abundant free testing provided by the state.
Yeah.
So that issue is kind of something we don't have to worry too much about. Who bears responsibility for it?
Yeah, I asked that before you sort of answered it on its own. But starting last August, I want to say, it's so hard to keep track of time. But we actually applied to be a testing facility in our office. So we do rapid tests. We're only authorized to do rapid tests. We're not a full lab. But we do have that capability to do that here. And that's helped us immensely when there are any questions or any challenges or, you know, anybody that has a different view of things, we say, will you just, you know, go in our designated testing office and sit for 15 minutes. So that's been really helpful for us. It's absolutely a process. You have to apply to the state, you know, and get a waiver and all these things, but might be something worth looking into.
Yeah.
Has anybody had, I was on a call this morning and the director of the Minneapolis and St. Paul JCC's Jewish Community Centers, they had already started this like a week or two ago. And he was actually very pleased with the results so far, but he did say two staff resigned over it. Mm-hmm. Since we have our other topic is retention and recruitment, I'm just wondering if anybody that has started this has experienced that.
We haven't. I'm sorry.
No, you go ahead, whoever was about to talk.
It was Ann, thank you. In New Jersey, and you guys, you probably already know this, I mean, the there was, you know, an executive order that came down from the governor that was speaking to certain parts in healthcare, and we designate ourselves as healthcare because we do provide a level of service in as far as therapy, et cetera. But we found that we weren't actually under that executive order. Now, obviously with the president announcing, it's a little different. So we're kind of, you know, we're waiting to see what happens. There's been other discussions that I've had with other groups that we're with, some from the get-go requiring it as a condition of employment, no testing. No testing option. It's a condition of employment. And if you don't, then you can't be employed. We have probably about, I think probably close to 90% of our staff are already vaccinated. We haven't even considered, to be honest, with our clients. We do a COVID screen with every client that we see. We do a lot of community-based work. So we're out in the community, in the clients' homes and wherever they are. Everybody still wears masks. We didn't change that. We do rely on some telehealth, but you know, within the community supports, we're relying less and less on that. Outpatient, we're still doing a lot of, more of telehealth, but the community stuff, we're doing more face-to-face. But everybody gets screened. Everybody wears a mask. If they don't, or they won't, or they look like they're sick, they don't get the service that day. But we haven't even considered mandating for, you know, clients or how that would look coming into our buildings, certainly in the community, which again, it's a lot of the work we do. So something new to consider. Thank you.
I can just share our experience. We were, I would say, right on the cusp and had a lot of pressure actually from our board to sort of get back to normal, to the point that a couple of our staff members who are unvaccinated, who would normally attend regular board meetings in July, when the board decided to have its meeting as a hybrid, but most of the board was going to be in person, those staff members were asked to attend only virtually and not be in person. Understand that most of the board members had been coming and going from the building with those said staff members as well on a regular basis, right? So there's a difference between perception of being seen in a meeting in person versus they'd been sitting in those people's offices mm-hmm. with a mask on, but like still in person, right? But so we had a lot of pressure to get back to normal. And then with sort of the increase and to, you know, have people able to take off their masks in common spaces. And now that, you know, sort of the vaccine rates were going up and there was a lot of sort of like disagreeing opinions here about what we should be doing. And those who were, and I will just say that among our staff, we're a very small staff, but about 12% of our staff is not vaccinated, does not plan to be vaccinated. And I do think probably if we were to get to that point, would be walking, or it would be a very, I mean, it would be a very yucky, ugly situation. I don't know what that looks like. I know that there's commitment by our CEO that is not the direction he wants to go, but there certainly have been some questions by the board. Whether we should go in that direction. So if there is further pressure, who knows what that will look like. We did, however, so we were on that sort of cusp of like, what does this look like? Could we start having some of our, you know, just like individual therapy, you know, counseling sessions? Would some of our clinicians be willing to have their clients back in? We're certainly not opening our food pantry up or like not, you know, big open things, but one-on-one in an individual case management situation where they need to fill out paperwork together or something like that. Can we leave it up to the individual clinicians whether or not this is an appropriate situation since the clinician probably knows the situation with their client and masking and all of that. And then we in fact had our one and only COVID case of one of our vaccinated staff members who is actually one of those breakthrough cases. And it actually did create a lot of unrest just amongst the staff alone, who then felt like, okay, we had been in this little bubble, you know, just amongst staff. And now that bubble just sort of, you know, 18 months in is feeling very, very threatened. And even, you know, talking about now what's the appropriate time for that staff member who did test positive, was vaccinated, and when are they allowed to come back? Because after you've tested positive, you can't get a negative test for, they say something like 90 days or 120, right, you know, whatever it is, right? And so some people saying, well, you told me before I could come back, I had to have a negative test. So why don't they have to have a negative test? Well, it's apples and oranges, right? And that when they say it's 10 days or it's 14 days or like, what's the appropriate, right? And some people saying, well, if that person's allowed to come back to work, I'm not coming back to work. So yeah, it's really gotten a little bit
complicated
because right, people were sort of like almost re-traumatized. Like we thought we were getting to this place of being able to open. So yeah.
I think a lot of agencies have these breakthrough cases. I mean, have any other agencies here? Right. So that does make it super hard. Yeah, I've heard of that a lot in these past few weeks. And so no one knows what to do now because you're double vaxxed and
you're so still, I think, sick. And that's led us to be both recognizing, like, that's what moved us to vaccination. Like, I don't think we just thought, well, now we're going to have to require vaccination because 70% of the people are going to get vaccinated and then most people are going to be protected. And then obviously we all experience the same thing. At the same time as we're recognizing that need for that additional caution now, we had dropped the mask requirement. I think, Leah, you were saying the same thing, and then we added it back in. I think we're also having the recognition the other direction, which is to say that it's not going away. Hopefully, after Delta, you know, Eta or Deuteron or whatever it'll be, will be no worse and hopefully not nearly as bad. But if it doesn't get way worse, where everyone's going to lock down, because it's just so hard to imagine a big lockdown again when we've reached vaccination levels. So we're really trying to be both cautious and careful and to say, this is sort of the next normal is going to include people risking getting sick. Like it's just...
Part of what we're struggling with here, you know, and it's gone into my thinking about what we do with our staff, is that our staff seem to place all the scary parts of their world into work. But they will get on a plane over the weekend and go and participate in a 500 person wedding and then tell me that they're afraid to come to a board meeting. So, you know, I have to balance the fact that, you know, their risk of exposure is not just at work. And so we never dropped the mask mandate in public areas. We told people in their private office, if they're with one other person, you know, they can decide what they're both comfortable with and take their mask off. And they're, you know, but in all the public areas, you're to wear a mask. And, you know, I feel like we have to balance the fact that we can't own the responsibility for 100% of the risk. They're out there going to restaurants, they're going to parties, they're going into other people's homes, they're going to the synagogue or whatever. And I'm not saying any of those are bad things, but for them to then say that I won't come to work,
right,
is just not reasonable. And so, you know, I've made it a requirement that everyone has to be in the building, you know, part of the time. You know, if people share offices, they can be on a rotating schedule so they don't have to be there at the same time. We are very lucky that there's only one staff member who's out of like 60 or 70 that, you know, is not vaccinated and probably never will be. And I think we're willing at this point, if necessary, to separate from her if she, you know, won't do it. Because part of what's happening is there are a small group of us that have been here throughout the entire pandemic, and people are starting to feel resentment for the people who refuse to come in and who are delegating work to them because they don't want to come in. You know, they're just sort of like, it's your time to show up. I've been, you know, carrying extra weight. And so there's sort of this, you know, in order to keep peace, we've had to say, look, everyone's got to show up. You know, you don't all have to be here 5 days a week, but everyone's got that, being in the building or being capable of being here or in the community, wherever your job is. Like if you're a job coach, you have to be able to go to the job site. You know, that's a requirement of everybody's job. And if they're unwilling to do it at this point, we have to have a serious conversation. So the one person who's not vaccinated does come into the office. She's always double masked with a shield and, you know, she's very, very careful, but she does come as required when her supervisor tells her, or she'll go out to a job. She's an employment person. She'll go out to a job site if needed to do job coaching. So.
Yeah. Have there been, so a lot of our staffs, we've like between 450 and 500, depending on the project or the month or whatever. And we have about 10% of our workforce is not, and will have openly said they will not be. And so we are looking at doing a mandate. We're teetering on connecting that with more of a return to the office. We've stopped using return to work because more than half of our staff in hospice and home health care and support and like never stopped. So it was kind of a smack in the face to them to say, oh, we're going to return to work when nobody really stopped working. So we
very just, smart wording, you know, yeah, it's true.
Change that. But it's, you know, determining. For a lot of our staff, we've had people that relocated during this time and we've kept them because they can work for us wherever, except as we do some of return to work and we're looking at cohorts, you know, 50% of your time's in and out and those things. We are also an organization that does the testing on site. If you come on site that day that you're there, you have to test regardless if you're vaccinated. But for us, some of our staff, a large portion started having their vaccinations in January. So now it's like looking at boosters and how we're going to track all that because we've tracked all the vaccinations, but now like, how are we? So it's becoming complex to say the least, especially with that. I mean, we have one HR person that all they do is a COVID call every morning at 8 a.m. and, you know, tracking all of that and tracking the testing and tracking. So it's created, I mean, you know, a whole nother position just to be able to deal with that amount of staff and that much compliance. And then you add all the OSHA regulations and are you doing all of that? And who's in charge of that? And have you walked through and put all your, you know, workflows and walkflows and stickers all over? And you also have to attest every day if you're coming into the office, which we will do for clients. We're hoping, we're thinking January. We were supposed to be October 18th, but that just got pushed in Maryland. The rate's hovering around 5%. So we've kind of dialed it back. But if clients do need to be seen, they are allowed to come into the office and then we just do a attestation with them too. But it's so many moving parts that it takes so much time. I would say on this operational level, not just, you know, on the HR side of it. So kudos to those of you who have kind of gotten into this really good wheel of making this all work for sure.
Ellie, when I think about the possibility of boosters, I just, at this point, I'm like, I just can't even, we can't even go there yet. It's like, you know, because if we were really planning ahead, I suppose we would not only collect vaccination cards from staff, but we would record the date. Then we would figure out but we don't even still know. Is it 6 months? Is it 8 months? Mm-hmm. No one really knows. We got the World Health Organization telling us, stop it, America, stop doing the boosters. So I think for us, it's just like, let's just get started and then we'll deal with the boosters later. But I totally appreciate you asking.
Well, what I was going to say, wait, Carl, did you go to that webinar that JFNA sponsored like around 3 weeks ago? It was really very good about vaccination. They had a doctor and, you know, legal experts, and basically what they said and why I wanted to jump in is that you can't do anything as of then 3 weeks ago with boosters. Like, you know, you can just hope that you can get, you know, the vaccination cards, but we can't mandate boosters to anyone because,
you know,
this
whole thing reminds me in some ways of when AIDS first became kind of well known. You know, there was first identifying high risk groups, you know, it was like this, you know, And then what healthcare finally realized is universal precautions. The only thing that works is to assume everyone that you come in contact with is infectious and to take the appropriate precautions. And I think that's the direction we're moving. We're going to be living in a world where this is not going to go away. The vaccines will get better, but they'll never prevent 100%, you know, just like flu shots don't, just, you know, and we're going to have to learn how to live with it. And I think it's going to be adopting some set of universal precautions that we're comfortable with. You know, we're not medical, so it's not going to be the same necessarily as a doctor's office. We can figure out, but we're just going to have to, you know, so like, for example, we've taken a couple large offices and we've turned them into sort of group rooms or spaces where if a therapist doesn't feel like their office is large enough to have a one-on-one, they can just reserve a larger room and socially distance. And, you know, so we're just going to have to adapt the environment, you know, because, you know, look, we're already going on 2 years, you know, we can't wait. I think some of it is to say, what risk level are we comfortable with? And that might vary by setting a little bit. And then what are the precautions that we're going to make permanent, you know, now that we know that we're living in this world for the foreseeable future. And I just think that if we get too hooked on documenting when your shot was and less on what are common sense precautions, we're going to go down the wrong track and waste a lot of time. So I don't know, that's where my thinking has evolved to.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're right. But, you know, what happens if someone gets sick, someone dies? I mean, the problem is all the legal issues, I think, as well, right? Isn't that a big part of what we're concerned about?
I mean, we're always worried about that. But I also think, like, most of us prior to COVID were not checking vaccination status for everything else.
Right.
So if you weren't checking for polio and rubella and measles and mumps and everything, you know, then, you know, yes, COVID is scary, but, you know, you never know if the person next to you on the bus or next to you in services has TB and nobody checked before, you know, so there's going to have to be at some point some sort of way that we learn to, you know, incorporate this new risk into our day-to-day life. And I kind of feel like, you know, as this thing has evolved from what we thought was a temporary situation into a long-term situation, we have to start thinking. I think we have to start thinking differently, that's all.
And I could speak to that as I think maybe the only, you know, sort of residential provider on this call, at least. For those of you that don't know, JARC was started in Detroit almost 50 years ago, more than 50 years ago now. And we house people with developmental disabilities and group homes throughout the county. And since the beginning, COVID has obviously been a challenge as most of our people served are of the highest risk groups. And we've absolutely had people contract COVID-19. We've had people pass away, including staff, because it is such a high risk environment. And we, you know, we're in a little bit of a different position than I think most of you on this call, but that doesn't mean that it's, you know, any less important. But because we receive Medicare dollars, because we receive, you know, all of these sorts of groups, because we're a company with more than 100 employees, we do collect people's, you know, polio and TB and to work in our homes, you have to get a TB test. If you're a new hire, you know, I had to get a TB test. I don't even work in the homes. So we are kind of used to that. And Carl, you said we kind of have to get used to the new normal, and for better or for worse, we can't really get used to the new normal, right? Like this is not a sustainable sort of model that our homes are locked down and they can't leave and nobody can come visit them. A lot of our people served are sort of, you know, their mental capacity is declining because they don't go to work anymore. They don't go to the grocery store. So yes, we do need to figure out how to continue to operate, but at the same time, anything we can do to make sure that our staff are vaccinated or are getting boosters, yeah, or and anything that we're basically legally allowed to do, we're going to force, you know, pretty hard, you know, and if we have to say it's for the good of the people served at the end of the day, if we need to let people go for that, then I think that is something that we're willing to do.
Interested, do any of current organizations mandate flu vaccinations?
No. We provide them on site. It's not mandated, but we do everything we can to encourage it. In the hospital that I worked in prior to coming to JFS, what we had done is gone to what we called mandatory participation. So whether or not you would agree in the end to get a flu shot, you had to meet with the, you know, the person providing the vaccination. And in the end, you could fill out a declination form, but we required 100% participation. But then what we did is that if you said no, for whatever reason, you know, whether it was religious or medical or whatever, you had to wear a mask. This was obviously pre-COVID, during the entire flu season, whenever you were on site. Wow. So, you know, in order to participate in protecting patients and your coworkers, you had to wear a mask, you know, during flu season if for whatever reason you declined. And so that actually got the vaccination rates up much, much higher, just requiring participation, you know. So that's sort of the direction I'd like to move in with flu shots here, as some sort of mandatory sort of meeting to talk about it. And then in the end, you can make your own decision.
Tim, were you going to say something?
Yeah, I was going to say that we, our vaccination policy includes the flu shot and other vaccines for infectious diseases. And we strongly encourage them. And then we go on to say that we're requiring COVID. Mm-hmm. So we're requiring COVID vaccinations or regular testing. We are not, at this point at least, prepared to do anything with our clients. We're not going to be checking them upon entry. Our office is open. It's been open now for about a month and a half. We're bringing all of our staff back to the office. Right now, we only have about 15 people in the office, and we'll be bringing everybody back on October 4th. And that's when our vaccine mandate takes effect.
So Tim, with your vaccine or testing, is it a choice for everyone to either be tested or get the vaccine, or is the testing only for people with medical or religious exemptions?
Yeah, that's a good question. Right now, we're going to treat them all the same, because if somebody applies for medical exemption and we say, "Well, I'm sorry, but your doctor didn't corroborate your request," they're still not going to get it. And so we're just going to treat them all the same. So medical, disability, religious, or just nope, ain't going to do it. They're all going to be treated the same.
Yeah, I'm working on a policy now. And my concern was if I gave it the testing as an option, it just puts more burden to track so many more people. You know, so some policies I've seen, if you don't have, you know, if you don't have an approved medical exemption or a religious exemption, it's vaccine or termination. You know, you know, you give them a period of time, but then it's termination. Mm-hmm. And so I'm trying to, that's why I was asking what you were doing, because I'm trying to figure out what is the right kind of path for us here.
Yeah, we haven't really addressed that or else part of the equation. Yeah.
So I just want to throw out a hypothetical that I happen to know from a friend of mine who is a CFO actually at an organization in the city, who actually has a doctor's exemption, you know, medical exemption letter that was written for 6 months. And when I spoke with him, because I was curious about what his situation was at this sort of crossroads, he was told by his doctor when he went back, because he was eligible in January. So it was coming up on like, that 6 months is up, and his organization has already mandated it in the city. And he was told by his doctor, who he's in like active medical treatment by this physician, that the doctor was basically like, I'm not going to be able to write you another letter. My lawyers have said, I can't write you another letter. I will lose my medical license. Mm-hmm. So now this doctor, you know, under all of the pressure of this, who believes his patient shouldn't get the vaccine, is now not going to be in the position to write his patient another exemption letter.
Wow.
Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I, again, I'm throwing it out just because we're having this conversation, but it's just something to think about that, like, there are, and obviously it's a minor, you know, it's a very small sliver, but there are people for whom may be in that category of they're not doing it. There are probably a lot, there are a lot more in the category of I'm just not, right? But for whom aren't actually able to even get the right documentation. And so then to be in a situation where you're stuck either by employment or as a client or whatever, and what does that mean for our organizations if we can't provide some way to access our community? What does that mean? You know, just throwing it out there.
That person's really between a rock and a hard place. I mean, you know, and the agency, totally. Because if you're mandating it and
right.
he can't find the documentation, then, you know, it's a terrible situation. Yeah.
So we're working through a lot of what's been shared in all of the various cities, agencies, and I'm happy to share as things continue to develop, but just sort of highlighting as it connects much as what's been shared. So we, had have a state mandate for vaccinations that came out in August that had a pretty tight turnaround for specific groups of individuals, many of which are our staff. So we've therapeutic day school, so all the school employees, everyone in the health, you know, who's considered a healthcare provider. We also deem all of our buildings healthcare facilities. So puts us into a special category there. And then Jacob, as you mentioned, you know, we also have, not, it doesn't sound like it's to the extent that you do, but do have several residential homes as well. So fast forward now, literally as we're in this meeting, which is why I'm like, oh, I can share this as we get it. Our VP of HR, along with our sort of the other, you know, Federation and JCC and others here in Chicago are all working as one with the union because they're negotiating how we're rolling all of this out as far as a vaccination mandate across the whole agency, which we're going to require people to be vaccinated by fully vaccinated. So 2 weeks after their second dose of a two-dose regimen by October 31st. And so, but that is literally a continued conversation that is happening while we're in this space together. I'm happy to, it's obviously, as we all know, super complicated. And as we work through that, I'm happy to share anything with any of you as we develop that. Yeah.
And Miriam had asked for what you had written up, Lee, too. You can send it to me, that would be great. And I can put it in the resource
line. Yeah, I saw that. I will, it's not in a policy form yet, okay. But the way in which you communicated to staff is a thing I can definitely send, and others probably have that. It's gonna need to be incorporated into our policies, but it has not been yet.
And then, I was gonna say, unfortunately, unlike some of you have shared, you know, like, I think Carl, you said, you know, that most everyone had been vaccinated. We believe many more are vaccinated than we know to be true, but to date, it's all been voluntary to submit your vaccination card. Mm-hmm. And so we're sitting at right now at 61%, which if that's the case is really low. Mm-hmm. And so we don't know, which is part of the challenge, and have had multiple breakthrough cases of staff. So in the latest of which was last week with a school staff. So now we have multiple people at home and a student infected as well. So
yeah, we got very lucky when we were able to, through a partnership with the local hospital, make vaccination available to the vast majority of all of our staff very early, like in December. And when I made that offer, I said, you know, that I asked for people to voluntarily, you know, share their vaccine card with me, because we were, you know, what I told folks is I wanted to use that as a way of trying to figure out when we hit our vaccination rate, that it was safe enough to start coming back in. And fortunately, people, I mean, I never enforced it or, you know, threatened people, but they just gave me their card. So I was able to count and know. And then in our disability program, the families of the disabled adults who come in were so anxious to get their family member back to an in-person program that we shared with the group that if they were willing to share the vaccination status, that would help us make a decision. And all of the families immediately shared, you know, voluntarily the vaccination status. So when we went back to in-person services for them, we knew that 100% of our staff and all but one of the clients whose doctor said, it's not safe, I'm not comfortable. So like 99% of the clients were all vaccinated. So at that point we felt pretty safe and, you know, that we could go back to in-person services with some, you know, caveats, obviously other safety issues. But, you know, that was one situation where, you know, the families were a little bit of a community already, and I felt more comfortable, you know, asking them to share. But with our general clients, we just haven't felt like we wanted to make services conditional on a vaccination status. So we haven't done that in any other program.
That's where I think we're sort of starting this new in between, where you can always get services, but if you choose to have them in person, that's when you're going to be asked for this information. And, you know, thankfully for many clients, teletherapy continues to work. For some, it's actually the preference. Insurance is paying for it, you know, all of those things. It's not the only service, but it'll be interesting to see how long, you know, we can do that. Just again, anecdotally, when we asked our staff to voluntarily and anonymously participate in the survey and tell us their vaccination status, we had some who basically said, their supervisor, none of your business. And we didn't, not everybody even did the survey. But then when we required them to submit it to HR by last Friday, we had good participation. Mm-hmm. I mean, good results, but we knew it wasn't everybody who was vaccinated. And then when I sent an email telling all the supervisors the status of their direct reports and asked them to follow up just today, because this happened Friday to today, we've had a whole bunch more people send their cards to HR. So as soon as it came to the supervisor saying to their report, hey, we need to know your status, and it's my responsibility as your supervisor to be checking your test, your negative test, if I don't have it, because the supervisor doesn't want to do that. It just went way up. So I do feel like, you know, we're going to have some holdouts. We're going to have to figure some pieces out. We know some people aren't going to get vaccinated, but in terms of collecting the information, our staff's about 115. Once people are starting to know that it's not a private, as many people as want to say it's a private matter, it just isn't anymore when you work with people. And I think that's just going to be the way it's going to have to be.
Interestingly enough, when you talk about returning, you know, how the success of telehealth and all that, I think in our adult population, that's certainly very much the case. The therapists who led the desire to come back were the pediatric therapists who, you know, were incredibly creative. I mean, we send home play therapy kits with every single one of our child clients so that, you know, they could have something safe and, you know, participate and whatever. But it was the child therapist who said, my client's just not doing as well. I need to see them in person. Mm-hmm. And so they were the very first ones to bring some of their clients back, and they figured out a way that they felt they could do it safely and worked with the families. And so it was interesting, they led the charge, and then some of the adult therapists decided if their colleagues could do it, they would give it a try for some of the folks who didn't seem to be doing as well. So now, I mean, I would say probably 85% of our counseling visits are still virtual, but there are clients in the building every day. You know, for some sessions, sometimes, you know, and each therapist is a little different. Some of them do like their initial session in person if possible, and then switch to telehealth. It sort of varies, but everyone's doing a little bit of a mix.
I think it's been similar for us, Carl, in that same thing with children. You know, the parents and the children are really anxious to get back in person. Same thing with clients who are doing EMDR. It just doesn't work
as well
virtually. Mm-hmm. You know, so some of those pieces. We are, Lisa's probably about to say it, but I'll just say it. We're down to our last 5 minutes, I think. We're getting close to our time. Anybody want to share something or ask for any input before we wind down?
Just wanted to add, Lee, to the previous conversations that we are in a little bit of a different situation where we actually ran our own vaccine clinics for all of our staff and all of our persons served and all of their families. So the volunteering of information wasn't an issue for us because I have a list and I have since January of who's vaccinated and who's not. And then the problem that we're now running into, and this was sort of the, I guess the, as it's 4/26, the topic that we didn't cover is that the turnover of our staff is just incredible. And we didn't feel comfortable asking new hires if they were vaccinated. So while at one point I knew exactly what percentage of our staff were vaccinated, now that we have, you know, basically 60 staff that had left since January and 60 staff that have joined since January, we're really sort of back in the dark, which is now we're running into what you guys have been all dealing with the whole time of asking for volunteer information. So it's sort of a, we're a little bit behind, but we were lucky in the beginning to be able to offer vaccinations and sort of gather the information that way.
Well, and that's one of the biggest reasons why we're looking at mandating is that we want to be able to tell new people that they must be vaccinated. And you can't do that if you don't hold your own current staff accountable to the same standard. And so, but we have a ton of students that come through, interns, and we did notify all of the schools that no student would be permitted in the building without a vaccine. And since most of the schools are requiring it anyway, it wasn't a big deal, but we figured that's one area where, you know, this is voluntary. It's a gift we're giving to the community to supervise all these students. We weren't going to allow them to be the ones to bring stuff into the building. So we did tell all the schools that that was required. And
well, I was just going to say what I've been hearing a lot of is that everyone is now mandating vaccines. It's on their job descriptions, you know, that it's required. So a lot of agencies are doing that now. So they're not going to be left in the dark like you are, Jacob. I was just going to say in the last minute and a half that we have our executives networking forum coming up in January in Scottsdale, Arizona. And that's for number twos and for number ones, right? And it's a day and a half, and it's really an opportunity for you to connect with others. Actually, Carl was the co-chair of it last year when it was online. Some of you may have participated in the strategic planning. Anyway, we're sending out a survey. The whole reason I'm telling you this is I want you to respond to the survey. It'll take, I don't know, a minute and a half because it's three questions about whether you would come, if you think you would come in January to Scottsdale, because we really have to start planning. Are we telling the, you know, hotel that we're going to be there? Are we getting less rooms? Are we going to put it off again? Is it going to be online? So we really want your input. And then as Lee mentioned, we are planning our annual conference May 13th to 15th in Minneapolis, and beautiful, cool Minneapolis. And hopefully we'll all be there in person because
used to be cool in Minneapolis.
Yeah, that's what I meant. not nice and warm like we've been.
It's cool, cool, but it's not temperature cool. That's for sure.
Oh, in May, it's not cool in May.
Finding a lot of times where it's not hot these days. Like everybody else's temperatures are changing.
Okay.
And we can't get rain to save our lives, and it's pretty warm around here. So.
Okay. Well, that'll be great. So anyway, look for that survey.
Lisa,
yes.
As long as we've talked so much about vaccination for the thing in Scottsdale.
Yes, everyone has
questions
vaccinated.
About the extent to which people would come if there was a vaccine requirement.
If there is a vaccine requirement, and everyone that we interact with at the hotel will also be required to be vaccinated. So, but we will have to be masked indoors, just like everyone. And we thought maybe we could do our programming and who knows what outside, but I think it'll be a little too cold in January in Scottsdale. So those are some of the questions, and it will all be on that survey. And it will also tell you who we've hired to facilitate the discussions. I think it's going to be a really great opportunity. We're going to be talking about what we've learned and how we can continue to grow and sustain, but we're going to be talking about the challenges for CEOs to really come together to talk about what they've been through, how they, you know, have grown stronger and what they've learned, as well as we're going to give you some tools for sustaining your agencies going forward. But we can do that online too. We just want to know if people would be coming in person or not. So let us know, okay? And I'm going to be sending you information about that Corifery program, that four-week Corifery course that we've designed for Jewish Human Service executives, which we think will be really great. So if you're interested in that, let me know if you have any questions. I have a lot more information about Tamara, who's going to be running it for us as well, okay? That's it. Thank you, Carl. Thank you, Lisa. Thank you, everyone.
For taking time.
Thank you, everybody. Fast if you're fasting.
And Rachel, everyone, take care and be well.
Bye.